Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 28th of Tevet. Today we're going to study a couple of tshuva. We'll start with a tshuva from Yabia Omer, from Vadi Yosef, and it's a little bit of a heartbreaking tshuva, although it kind of works out okay, but B, it actually is a tshuva sent to the rabbi of a kehillah called Shaarei Tzion, which when I was growing up was known as Shaarei Zion, and this is from the 28th of Tevet of Tufshin Nun Dalid of 1993. So that was after I had already moved out of Brooklyn, but it's to the rabbi of Shaarei Zion, to Rabbi Baruch Ben Chaim, and he wrote back to, I think he's an Israeli, so he wrote to Rav Yosef about a case that had come up in his community. And this is much of what Meshivim do at their time, right? So this is the question. There's a married couple in his community. So Shaarei Zion is a Sephardi community. It's a Syrian community. And there's a married couple who are Baalei Tshuva. They got married about 4 years before, and he's a Kohen. The husband is a Kohen, and they already have two daughters in the 4 years they're married. Before they got married, the husband reports, I asked her if she was a virgin. And originally she said yes. And then a couple days later she said to me, well, I'm not a virgin. There was one time about a year ago, one guy, and I don't know if he's Jewish or not. And then a couple of days later before they got married, but at the time he's not observant, a couple days later before they got married, she says, you know what, it was two men, but I still don't know if they were Jewish or not. I remember if they were Jewish or not. I never knew if they were Jewish or not. They got married anyway. So because I think he didn't at the time care. The problem is that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who has had relations with a non-Jew, who has had consensual relations with a non-Jew. So I actually don't remember if it has to be consensual or not. That might be wrong. But if she's had a relation with a non-Jew, in this case it was consensual, whatever it was, if it was a non-Jew, he is, according to not allowed to marry her because that renders her halakhically a zonah. Zonah is a complicated word, so it often means prostitute, but it often just means a woman who has had relations that she's not allowed to have had. So therefore, if she had relations with a non-Jew, he couldn't be married to her. So in the last little while, he says, he's asking this rabbi, Bar Chaim, Bar Ben Chaim, he says, we've gotten closer to Torah and mitzvot, we're keeping more of the Torah, and we are happily married, we have two kids, the marriage is working out well, but then I recently learned the prohibition of Isur Zonah le Kohen, that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who qualifies halakhically as a Zonah. So I don't know what to do about it, because now I'm married to this woman. So then when he was asked by rabbis, he said, yeah, I don't think, when we had relations the first time, it seemed to me that she had had relations before. And then they asked him another question. It's not said in the response of what the question was, but they asked him another question. He said, you know, it bothers me, but my wife doesn't always tell the truth. Now, so he means that as in, so I can't really ask her if she really remembers or not. I can't really press her on these questions because I'm not fully convinced that she'll tell the truth. So then she says to me, you know what, since we got married, I've remembered and I've realized, and I remember that all the two men who I remember having relations with were both Jewish. So he's saying, I'm not sure I'm allowed to trust her on that question because she unfortunately doesn't always tell the truth. So that's the question we have. So how do you decide a halakha question like this? So the rabbi asking the question of Rav Yosef is going to give us an insight into the kinds of issues that bring up. You have a woman. We know she's had relations with men, two men, and we need to know what kinds of men they were. So what do you do about that? So the answer in halakha is you have to make presumptions. You have to find a way to see what assumptions you're allowed to. You're allowed to assume that she had relations with a Jewish man. That's the question. So he says, the rabbi, Rabbi Ben Chaim, who's writing to Rabbi Yosef, he says, Lichora, kevan de kaimalan, kol de parish biruba parish. Sorry, I think this is already Rabbi Yosef writing back. He says, since we have a general principle of halacha, that when you find an item, we assume in halacha that that item came from whatever the rove was. So the classic example is, I'm walking down the street, and I find a piece of meat, but it's not labeled. So am I allowed to assume it's from a kosher butcher store or not? And on that street, there are 9 kosher butcher stores and 1 non-kosher butcher store. So I'm allowed to assume that it came from the row, from the majority one, right? So that's what we mean by kol deparish biruba parish. It's a little complicated because how do you know that the street is what counts? Maybe it should be the whole city. And in the whole city, you have to assume there are more butchers that are non-Jewish than Jewish. But whatever that rove is, we assume that it comes from the rove. If that's true, if she was wandering in Jewish society, most of society is non-Jewish. So if she says, I had relations with a man, that man came out of society, and out of society, that man was likely a non-Jew because he came from the majority. That would mean then that we have to assume that she had a relationship with a non-Jewish man, and we have a suffolk, we have a doubt about it, and therefore they would have to not stay together because we have to assume that she's a zona. The Ritva Tektuvot, however, wrote that since most of the people who she's likely to have relations with, or most of the people she's likely to socialize with, are sherim, are people who she's allowed to have a relationship with, then you'd think that it should be okay. So that's klomar. In other words, explains what you say. Most of the people that she is close enough to have a relationship with, now you have to check this out. His assumption is that even when she wasn't religious, even when she wasn't observant, her social circle was mostly made up of Jews. If that's true, then we can, according to Ritva, we can, even though the majority of the world is non-Jewish, the majority of society is non-Jewish, we can assume that she had relations with somebody who would be close to her. So to the Orza Rua, and so to the Gaon Milisa of Yaakov Milisa, right, that all of the people who tend to be hanging out with Jewish women tend to be Jewish men. Now that's the kind of assumption I think you'd need to check out, but that's what he's suggesting. And even if you say that it's not true, that it's still a doubt, and maybe he, and especially since, and this gets back into the technical issue here, because the technicality is because while we say that called the parish miruba parish, anything that came out of the anything we find on its own must have separated from the majority, we have another principle that kakola kavua kemechza al mechza dami. That anything, that if the item that we're worried about was in one place and people came to it, so that would be there. We have to assume, we can't assume anything about it. We have to assume that it's 50-50. In other words, if I find a piece of meat that has already separated from a butcher shop and I don't know where it's from, I can assume it came from the majority. But if I went into a butcher shop of unknown origin, bought a piece of meat and then walked out and I have no idea of which butcher shop it was, so then I went in and it was in its own place, and that's called kavua. It's in its own place, and then it's mechza al mechza. It's like 50-50. So that would be true. So if that would be true, then if she had gone to him in some way, we'd have to say it's 50-50 whether it was a non-Jew or a Jew. Even so, the Rashba says in Kiddushin that even if we think that she went to him, it'll still be a majority for Jews. How would it be a majority for Jews? Because if she went to him, that's half. If he went to her, so that's called the parish miruba parish. Most came out of the Rideau Rove, and we've said there's broad agreement that the majority of people found by Jewish women in terms of having relations with Jewish women are Jews. I say that that's a wonderful assumption. I'm just not sure it's true of non-observant Jews anymore, but let's say it's true. That would help us here because it would say the majority is Jews. And then let's say she went to him, so you say it's 50-50. Even if you add a 50-50 to a majority, it still stays as a majority on the Jewish side. And then there are other ways to find a heter as well. Says Rav Vad Yosef, you have a Pnei Hoshua who says that even though in general when it's a Suffolk Shul Torah, we have a doubt about whether we have a Torah law that is at stake here, we're supposed to be Machmir, even if there's a Chezkat Heter, even if there's an original status of Heter. So Chezkat Heter, again, this comes back to the whole question of how do we establish realities in Halacha when we don't know the realities. And the answer is we rely upon rules. So one rule was Kola kavua kemechza al mechza. If something's found in its own place, then it's like 50-50. If it left its place, whatever its place was, then it's like the majority. And another rule is, if something has a chezkat heter, if it's got an established status of being allowed, then we generally assume that it continues to be allowed. However, says the Pnei Yehoshua, the idea that if we have a Torah doubt about something, so that's the next principle, is you have a doubt about a Torah principle, then we have to be machmir even if we have a cheskat heter. So if I have a status of heter, this woman is, as far as we know, allowed to kohanim. She has done nothing wrong. She's allowed to kohanim. And then we have a doubt because we know she's had relations, but we don't know with whom she's had relations. So that's a doubt. And this doubt now is about an issue that's dirabanan. I'm sorry, it's about an issue that's midoraita. That we have now have an officially established doubt that she may no longer be allowed to this kohen on a Torah level. So the Pnei Yehoshua says that's true. And we, Dirabanan, at a rabbinic level, will require the people to be machmir and to say, well, maybe it's not allowed and therefore I won't do it. However, Shaz B'nai Yoshua, that doubt to Rabbanan is not a sufficient doubt, lohotziya mi ba'ala kohen, to say that she should is not allowed to, that she has to divorce her husband, right? It'd be one question of, she had come to us with this information before they got married and said, I had relations with a non-Jew. We would have said, well, we might have said, well, it's true that we have a cheskat heter. It's true that you have the status normally of being muteret, of being allowed. And it's true that there might be a majority on the side of you've had, that there, it was a Jew you had relationship with, but it might be that since it's a suffix shul Torah, it might be that since it's a down on a Torah level, we would have said, nope, you can't get married. But since B'nai Yoshua, even if rabbinically we would say you can't get married, we would not say you have to leave the marriage, because even rabbinic level, with a cheskat heter, with her having had an original status of being muteret, there's not yet been completely, has not been proven not to be true, we let them stay married. So here too, since she's already married to the Kohen, and she doesn't know who she had relations with, we leave her at her cheskat heter. That's suggested by Rav Yosef. And so too said said the Prima Gadim, he said in the opening to the laws of Trefot, that in any case you have an even doubt, we leave it with the cheskat heter. And even that, even Derabbanan, and the Chatam Sofer said that all the places where we say that you have to worry, all the places that we say you have a cheskat heter, you have an established reality of being muter, being allowed, that's only at a Torah level. But he says in all those cases we think it's prohibited Derabbanan, but that's only where the doubts are equal. They're treu trei. They're equal. Or you have two chazakot that contradict each other. You have a chazaka that X is true and a chazaka that the opposite is true and they contradict each other. So there we have to leave, even though she originally started with a chazaka heter, there we have to say that it's asur. But if it's not like that, we leave her at her cheskat heter. And the chazaka seems to say, even if there's a little bit of a reuta, even if there's a little bit of a doubt about whether or not we can believe that she's allowed, or any of these situations, Gonzo says, in all these cases, nonetheless, we'll leave her at her cheskat heter that's already been established. And therefore, here too, where she doesn't know with whom she had relations, there's no reason to make her get divorced. Now, you might say, well, what if she's lying to be allowed to stay with her husband? So he says, Rav Yosef says, we don't have to assume that she's lying, because we have another halachic principle that comes along. And the halachic principle is Migo. So Migo says that when somebody has a better claim than they originally made, then they have the right to be believed about a less completely believable claim. So in this case, the claim that she could have made was she could have said nothing. When he asked her before their marriage, did you have a relationship with anybody else? She could have just said no. Right? So now that she said yes, she's the only reason we have to think that she might not be allowed to her husband. But she didn't say she wasn't allowed. She didn't say it was a non-Jew. She said she doesn't know who it is. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef says, it's her bringing it up that makes it be an issue. But she's claiming that she thinks she's allowed to her husband. So since she spoke up and she thinks she's allowed to stay with her husband, then we should be able to do it. Now that's, I think, and I don't generally critique the tshuvot that we learn together, but I think this is an example of seeing where Rabbi Yosef is working very hard to allow this couple to stay together, even though the technicalities of halacha would seem not to say it. So, for example, he's built a rove that is questionable, and that he said it's a rove of people who are living, who are near her, or in her social circles, who are Jewish. That was certainly true in the sources that he's citing, but it's not nearly as clearly true in the sources that we're talking about, that in this woman's case. And then he talked about the fact that generally there's a requirement to be machmir derabanan, and he cited sources to say that we don't have to be machmir derabanan, which are valid sources, but he's building up one issue after another. And then now we have, he says, well, maybe she's lying about not knowing. Maybe she really does know that it was a non-Jew. He says, well, but she has amigos. She could have stayed quiet, and had she stayed quiet, we would never have known. That's what he really means to say. But now that she spoke up, so in halacha in general, if somebody speaks up about something where they didn't have to, and then they say, this thing that I'm telling you doesn't mean that I'm liable for anything or that I owe you any money, let's say, because I, you know, let's say somebody comes to a person and says, you know, I once owed you money, but I paid you back. The person says, oh, I didn't remember you owed me money. And then he says, but I don't believe you paid me back. So there we say things like, apesh asu, apesh hit. The person who told you the information that led you to think that you're owed money is the person who now tells you that you're not owed that money anymore. And if we're going to believe one half of this statement, we have to believe the other half. But in our case with this woman, it's hard to imagine how you're going to apply that. And he says, to Migo, she could have stayed quiet. It's true she could have stayed quiet. But the fact that she didn't stay quiet doesn't mean means that we should believe her that what? That she doesn't remember. Not that she's lying about it. She doesn't remember it. Even so, it throws us back on the other thing. So I think it's not so clear here as well that it's a case of Hapesh Asahu Hapesh Hitir. Then he brings out really an even more problematic source. The Shulchan Aruch says that Ra'ua Sheniv Alao Shenit Abra. Let's say we see a woman. We know that she's had relations with somebody, or she gets pregnant and, you know, she shows up pregnant one day. So today you could be artificially inseminated. That's a whole different discussion. But in those days, in the time of the Shulchan Aruch, for sure it meant she had had relations with somebody. Shulchan Aruch says, let's say there was only one non-Jew in the whole area, or there was a chalal, or somebody she's not allowed to have relations with, or if she has relations with that person, they can't she can't marry a kohen because somebody who's having relations with them makes her not acceptable to marry a kohen. It turns her into a chalala. She should marry a kohen. But if she marries the kohen, she shouldn't leave. She doesn't have to leave. She doesn't have to get divorced. But if she says, this is the Shulchan Aruch now, aval imram, if she says, eini yodat lemini valti, if she says straight up, I don't know who I had relations with, so then the Shulchan Aruch writes that she's harezo safeg zona. We have to worry that she might be halachically a zona, meaning we have to worry that halachically she might have had relations with somebody prohibited to her, which makes her prohibited to a kohen. And then even say la kohen teitzei, even if she marries a kohen, she has to leave the marriage, she has to get divorced, unless you have two full roves that make us believe that she must have had relations with a kosher, with an ordinary Jew. So that sounds like even if she's already married, she has to get divorced. Right, that's a clear Shulchan Aruch about exactly our case. If she says, I don't know who, unless you have some well-established reason to think that she must have had relations with a Jew, she has to get divorced. So that's the Shulchan Aruch, and that's a problem for us. Now, the Shut Semach Tzedek, now there happen to be two Shut Semach Tzedek. One was the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, and that's who's known as the Tzemach Tzedek, but before he came along, there was a prior Shut Semach Tzedek in like the 17th century, and that Shemach Tzemach Tzedek, who is Rabbi Yosef is quoting right now, he was asked about an almana who married a kohen. This is a woman who never claimed to be a betula, a virgin. She had been married before, so that part of it is fine. But they get married, and 5 months later, she gives birth to a baby that looks fully formed. So, you know, basically she was 4 months pregnant, it seems like, when she got married, which would mean that she had relations with somebody before she got married. Before she got married to this kohen. And she admits that she had relations before the marriage with, now she says, Baal Achota, the husband of her sister. So the husband of her sister is prohibited to her halachically because a man is not allowed to marry two sisters. And that's one of the arayot. So that would seem to make her into a zonah halachically. And the Tzemach Tzedek wrote, Shafilu im chayav lad shloshim yom, even if the baby lives for 30 days, which then should mean that the baby was a fully formed baby, which would definitely mean that she had had relations before the marriage. Nonetheless, we would still have a suffix. We're still allowed to doubt that maybe the relations she had were not with somebody who was prohibited to her like she claims it was. And the Tzemach Tzedek says this because we have a principle in halacha that in adam meisim atzmo rasha, that you're not allowed to incriminate yourself in halacha. So we are allowed to, Tzemach Tzedek says, we can disregard her claims. The physical evidence shows that she relates with somebody, but relations out of wedlock with a man, a Jewish man, do not render a woman problematic for a kohen. So we don't know who she had relations with. We have no reason to think that it was with a man who was prohibited to her. That's the way Tzemach Tzedek said it. So the Beit Meir had questions about that. He didn't understand it, but the Avdi Miluim tried to explain that since she got married to the kohen already, this is what the Avdi Miluim says, it's as if she said out loud, L'kasher nivalti, as if she was making a claim, I had relations with a man who is kosher, who was allowed for me. Why is it as if she said that? It's as if she said that because had she been married, had she had relations with a pasul, with a man who's not allowed to, she would never have gotten married to a kohen because it's prohibited for her as much for him. So that's an important thing to remember. When she's not allowed to, when she's not allowed to marry a kohen, we're thinking all about the kohen. But the fact is that it's also prohibited for her to be married to the kohen. So if it's also prohibited for her to do it, says the Avdi Miluim, she would never do it. So her doing it, her getting married to this kohen, is like implicit testimony that she's claiming that she was only had relations with somebody she was allowed to have relations with, and that doesn't render her invalid for a kohen. Now, the Miluim points, or Avad Yosef points, that there's a Ramah like that in Yeridea. Let's say a woman says to her husband, this is not the right time of the month for us to have relations with each other, and then she changes her mind. So she doesn't have to, halachically, if she just said it to her husband, she doesn't have to prove it. She doesn't have to give a good reason why it is that she claims, why she's allowed to claim that she's still okay, and that they can have relations with each other, as long as she goes and she acts intimately with her husband, then we can assume she's okay. And that's what the Ramah writes. The Radak writes, too, that anybody who gets married in public, so that's like she came to the court in the city and she said, I am allowed to get married to this person, and I'm a Tahora and all these kinds of things. So, here too, since she got married before lots of people, this woman, so it's as if she said, L'kasher nivalti, the only people I had relations with are people who I'm allowed to have relations with and still get married to you, even though she now changes her mind and says, no, it was a part, it were she to change. No, you know what, it was a non-Jew, I remember, I'm sorry, I feel very bad, but I remember, we don't have to believe her halacha, because that's called Chozer U'Magid. It's called Chozer U'Magid, we're saying, even though she might not have said it explicitly the first time. The fact that she got married to somebody who she would otherwise be prohibited to marry, saying Ravad Yosef and all these achronim, is like she's claiming it. And so now she says, oh, you know what, I feel terrible, I didn't say this and I deceived you, it was actually a non-Jew. We don't have to believe that. Now, normally when we say you can't be chozer u'magid, normally what we mean is that if you give testimony in court, you can't change that testimony because you're already giving testimony in court. But here she hasn't actually said anything out loud, and yet we're saying she can't change her mind about it, she can't say something different, because the implicit testimony in getting married is strong enough that we'll treat it like full testimony, and therefore she can't change her mind about it. And that's because one more halachic presumption, which is that in halacha in general, if a woman says something that would force getting divorced, we often don't believe her, because we often assume that she might have decided she wanted out of the marriage for other reasons. The reason given in the Gemara is Shema Ina Natna Be'acher. She thinks she's seen somebody better and she has an interest in somebody else, and therefore we don't tend to believe her about claims she makes that would mean that she has to get divorced. So now, part of the underlying point of all this responsive to me was the extent to which we rely on all these various halachic presumptions, right? The question was, first, can we halachically identify the type of person she must have had relations with? And that depends on things like what we consider a rove, things like what we consider the majority. So if we consider the majority to be non-Jews, you might have thought we have to assume she had relations with a non-Jew. That depends on whether she went to him or he went to her, because if she went to him, so then we think that he is counted as what's called a kavua. Because it's a kavua, then we half and half. But if he went to her, then we can follow the majority. But then the question is the majority non-Jews, or is it the majority of people who are close to Jewish women tend to be Jews, and therefore we can assume that it was a Jew? That, as I said before, is an interesting assumption to question in a society where the woman is completely non-observant and what she's doing about that. Then there were questions about whether we can believe her or not believe her about the fact that she says she doesn't know. So that depended on things like Migo, on when we make assumptions about whether people are telling the truth. And one of the factors that comes into play is if she had a much better untruth to say, or she could have just stayed silent, that often will allow us to assume that she could be believed. Then the last piece of it, again, coming back to many, many presumptions that we make, is that the Shulchan Aruch had said that if she says, I don't know who I have relations with, she has to leave, even b'di'evet, even if she's already got married, they have to end the marriage because she's a safik zonah. So now, Ovadia Yosef is quoting lots of Rechonim who say, well, the fact that she actually went ahead and got married to somebody, that would already be like implicit testimony, implicit claim that she's allowed to get married to that person, and therefore she doesn't have to get divorced, and that'll be true even if she later changes her mind, because that'll run up against one more halachic presumption, which is that once somebody says something in court and they give testimony about something, they're not allowed to change it because we worry that they have ulterior motives in the changing of it, such as maybe she wants to marry somebody else. And then he says, Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spector cited this idea of the Avdei Miluim and seems to have accepted it as a possibility. But then Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spector is going to question him. Before he gets to Rav Yitzchak Chanan Spector, I just want to point out that I think it bears noticing that Ravad Yosef seems not to be taking into account that she wasn't religious at the time that they got married. So for the Avdei Miluim's claim is that she's implicitly saying she's okay and allowed to marry this Kohen, that to me only makes sense, whether or not we're going to see in a second, Ritzel Khan will question it on other grounds, but only makes sense if we have the right to assume that she knows who's allowed and who's not allowed to a Kohen. But if she doesn't know the laws of Kohen, it seems like she doesn't, because her husband, the Kohen, didn't know the laws of Kohen, right? It's only once they've started coming closer to observance that he realized that there's an issur zonah l'kohen. There's a prohibition on a kohen to marry a woman who's had illicit relations with certain people. So I think there's every reason to expect that she didn't know it either. Now, it's hard to claim that if she didn't know what the law was, that their getting married is itself a declaration that she's allowed to marry him. It's at most a declaration that she's allowed to marry him according to what she knows about the rules of Judaism. Okay. Now, Rav Yitzchak Elkanan says, I think this is very strange, because that would mean that any woman, there's a case in the Gemara that talks about a husband, a man comes to a Beit Din after his first night with his wife, and he says, you know what, she wasn't a virgin when we got married. And the assumption then is, if she wasn't a virgin, that she must have had, remember, in the time of the Gemara, women would get in, they would have the first stage of marriage, which we call erusin, which in English, in Hebrew today, people think means engagement. In the Gemara meant, you'd have the ring ceremony. Once you have the ring ceremony, any relationship she has with a man other than her husband becomes adultery. So if he comes to a court and he says, Petach Patuach Matzati, he says, I found that she wasn't a virgin, and she had been very clear that she was a virgin before the erusin. So then we assume that in the relation, if he's right, the relations she had were relations she had while she was in Arusa, while she was halakhically not allowed to have these relations. She's an adulteress. So the Tzitzit Yitzchak Elkanan inspector, if the Avdi Milum is right, and that she can make implicit claims that she's okay, then why would we say here that she's making an implicit claim that it happened against her will, right? Or some other reconstruction of the events that would make it that she's allowed to have, that she's allowed to be married to this husband, and that he's not right. So that's Rav Yochanan's perspective. So he says the whole idea of implicit testimony to back up her claim, he doesn't buy it. But others disagreed. Machzav Avram thought that on a rabbinic issue, you don't have to worry about it as much, and you can't say that she made herself a chatichadi. So we don't say that she declared herself to be prohibited when she said, you know, I had relations with somebody, and especially since here the husband doesn't fully believe her, so he thinks that there's room to ignore what she's saying and to leave her with her husband. And then he quotes Meiri in Kiddushin, where he says, Meiri says, let's suppose a man says to another man, listen, your wife had an affair, and I saw it. So the Meiri says, if this man doesn't believe the man who says he saw it, in general, not just about this case, meaning let's say he believes him about the affair, but he doesn't believe this man in general, so the Meiri said it doesn't matter, because we say Ein davar she'be'erva pachot mishnayim. Another halakhic principle, that when it comes to matters that have to do with, now davar she'be'erva means sexual matters, so the question would be whether declaring her to have had an affair is considered a davar she'be'erva, but if it is, then you need to have two witnesses. So if you believe this other man, if the husband believes this other man generally, and he always believes the man, and it's as if two witnesses came, then here too you'd have to believe him. But if he doesn't generally believe him to that extent, then he doesn't have to believe him in this situation either. And the Bibi says, and I once actually ruled that way, an actual case that came before me, and the rabbis of my time agreed. So the Meiri is now saying that unless you have real information that you fully believe, and here the husband doesn't quite believe her about what she's saying. Also, there's a Tosfos Rid in Kiddushin who says that a zona marrying a kohen, a woman who's had relations marrying a kohen, counts as a davar she'be'erva, counts as a matter of sexuality. Although you might have thought it was a matter of just establishing statuses, he says it's a matter of sexuality, and therefore you need two witnesses, and that would help the Meiri's claim. And many others agree to this. Shouldn't have Avnei Nezer says he thinks that the Meiri is right, even though the Rambam seems to think that it's not true. And so too, the Shef Shmaitin, the Achiezer, and the Ikros Moshe. So there seems to be a general consensus that this counts as Davar She'be'erva, and therefore the rules of that would count. Rabbi Yitzchak says there's a lot more to say here, but since time is little, and I have a lot to do and stuff like that, he says also, this is like quaint in the age of emails, he says, I mean, back then it wasn't the age of it, says the person, the shliach, the messenger who had come with this question, who wants the answer, I guess they were willing to talk by phone, he wants to get going, and he's got a long way to go, so therefore Rabbi Yitzchak says, I'm going to write it at more briefly, and Tain Lechacham V'yach Kamod, and I will give it to you to think about it, and I'm sure you'll have more thoughts about this. You give something to a wise man, you give wisdom to a wise man, he gets even wiser, and he'll turn it into a wiser thing. So therefore, his psak is Misiyuma de Piska Dina. My psak is on this issue, Bekocha de Hetera, that you go with We always talk about the korach, the heter, adif, that we're trying to make things allowed in halacha and not allowed, and that's better to find ways to make things allowed, and therefore you should encourage them, they should continue learning Torah, and they should build a happy, you know, and Torah life together, and they should be happy with each other and stay together, and that's, and then he says, and please show this to Rav Yosef Harari Raful, who was, again, when I was growing up, a name that was well known in the community because he was an important rabbi in the Sephardi community. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Ateret Torah, which was a prominent Sephardic yeshiva in Flatbush when I was growing up. So the names are very familiar and very sentimental to me, and that's Rav Yosef Psak. So this is an example to me of a Psak where it's Rav Yosef. So it's not like he's going to say anything that's illegitimate or say anything that's way out there, but it is an example of him working hard to find a heter, to find making something permissible when it wouldn't obviously have been permissible on its face of it, and allowing this couple to stay together for the various reasons that we've reviewed. And that is a response of the day for the 28th of Tevet. Have a great day.